Inside every man is a hairy monster that can't be controlled. We get screwed up by our mothers unintentionally, but they screw us up. You can charge more, and the way that you justify charging more is by having a bigger transformation. Your model is you're selling your time. A model that makes more money is you sell the outcome. As a boy, right, like how did you become so nice is what I'm trying to figure out.
I don't know. It's a great question.
Welcome, my friends, to the show. We're going to look at Nathan's business today, see what comes up, how we can make him make way more money, have more fun, and live his freaking purpose. Let's see what comes up. Welcome to the show, Nathan.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So Nathan is my personal trainer. So we're going to meet in a few hours down at the gym, and he's going to make me lift some heavy shit so that I can get stronger and more muscular. So tell me about your business. Say, what does it look like today? How many clients do you have? How do you work with people? And like, you want to share it just not just with me, but also for like, I know some things, but obviously, but people who are watching are not going to know. So where are you at and where do you want to be in your business?
Yeah, so I am, like you said, personal training, and I've been doing it for the past, I guess, 10 or 11 years, and probably half of that time gap, the past 5 years, I've been able to do it full time and not have to have any other side things or supplementary type of work.
Curious, when you did have side things, what were you doing?
Yeah, so initially, this is kind of how I got into the fitness space, was working the front desk at the gym. Mm-hmm. And so there was a time when I was doing that and training clients at the same time. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of overlap in that regard. And so, yeah, about five or 6 years ago, I stopped doing that. And then there was also a time when I was, so from 2017 to 2013, I was a high school strength and conditioning coach here at Malibu High School. And that was supplemental for sure. And I enjoyed that, but having one-on-one clients was the goal. And as soon as I didn't have to show up to this school, and also too, it just stopped being fun, but it made more sense to have that time available to do one-on-one training. Mm-hmm. So I did that high school strength and conditioning job for 7 years. And then, so yeah, as it is now, I have a more or less like what the industry would identify as like a full load of clients. I have right now, during the week, I have 12 clients who I'm seeing regularly, and there's a
Wait,
Rolodex.
You're cheating on me?
Oh man, it's out of control.
You're spinning plates.
There's men, there's a few women.
Oh my God.
Maybe a kid
at the
here
same
and
time?
There. Sometimes. If that's what they want. I give them what they want.
All right. So yes, 12
Yeah.
clients.
Yeah, and there's other ones that are like on the Rolodex when they travel, they're here, or people I just know over the years who have less consistent schedules, but a dozen people that are consistent. Two of them are remote. I guess four are in home, and then the rest are at the gym where I meet them. And in total, it ends up being 25 to 30 hours of work per week in terms of meeting people and doing the training session. Aside from that, I probably spend, I mean, not a lot of time, maybe each week an hour total programming the workouts and mm-hmm. doing stuff to prep for those training sessions. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been at that level for the past, I guess, 3 years, mm-hmm. To where I've had this pace going. And you know, over the years, I've upped my rates. I think 2 years ago, I did a significant jump in increasing my rates because I felt like it was justifiable, and by industry standards, I was kind of behind in how much I was charging, and I felt like I was also offering a service that was worth the rate. I wasn't just picking a number because I want to throw more money my way, but it felt reasonable. It felt the right thing. I think it was still like a practical and real number to put towards the services that I offer. And and I guess now we're at the point where my man hours is in terms of like how many hours I can physically be in a place, and also the energy I can put towards that, is it's more or less maxed out. And there's days where So I probably have 5 or 6 sessions a day, but there's times when I have 8 or 9, and so I'm just kind of going nonstop, and I have to really make sure I have enough time in those days for myself to rest, even like to eat, and then to work out on my own and just like have my own life also with that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I
And
think
so then
that's
you
the,
have to
go ahead.
train yourself as well to keep, be in shape so people take you seriously as a trainer. That takes time as
Totally.
well. Yeah. You got
Totally,
to go
yeah.
to the beach and go for a swim and like tan and all that stuff, hard
Yeah,
work.
man.
And
Tan is
then
half the work. I mean, even fat looks good when it's tan.
yeah.
So you gotta look the part by the beach. You gotta make sure that you engage with it. But yeah,
Yeah.
and because I enjoy working out on my own too, so I wanna have that in my life aside from the health benefits. It's mentally engaging. It's like, some people like to golf or whatever the heck they like to do. So that's my thing, and I'm pretty committed to it at this point in time.
You don't
Yes, so
play 18 holes, you play 50 reps per set.
that's right,
Yes, I know. Yeah. Okay, sweet. So where do you want to be?
So that's the question, and you kind of randomly asked me the other day, as how it brought us here. You just kind of said out of the blue, do you want to expand your business? I was like, yeah, I really do. And so where do I want to be? I would like to have a life that would be more conducive for, not even for the life that I have now, because it fits well. Like, I'm not married, I don't have any kids, but I do perceive and hope for a future where I have those things. And I think right now, aside from how much more money I would like to make to have that work, I think the time and the availability of myself to support family and things like that, that's kind of what I'm thinking about now, how I expand upon that. Of course, like having a home, which goes along with the money side of things. But as far as where I'm at, I think the ultimate goal, because I'm 32 now, so I don't want to say be disappointed, but I think if I could have my choice, I wouldn't necessarily want to be face to face in front of clients working hourly by the time I'm, 35, 40, or later down the line. So I think that'd be the bigger goal, is to depart from the hourly in-person obligations. And then, of course, expanding, making more money in whatever, however that looks.
So fewer clients that you work face to face with, or zero clients that you work with in person?
Yeah, good question. I think if it made sense, I do like personal training. That's why I'm in it, and that's why I still do it. So if it made sense to where I could fit in and did have the luxury to where I could still train, I guess, a few people, and I guess to have training be the main and the only thing, to make it be a supplemental thing where it's more of like I get to do it because I like to, and I only take on a few people. I guess to your point, yeah, that'd be the answer. Few people.
Okay. Cool. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on like achieving that, on scaling your business in that way? What have you tried, or have you tried anything? What have you done so far?
Yeah, so I really haven't tried anything, especially to any success. I think for the longest time, I've struggled with the idea of like even exiting the fitness industry as a whole, like doing other things. And even then, it's like I don't know where I would go. I don't know. I don't think I would do very well working for definitely not a corporate entity, or even at this point in time, like I don't even know if I can work for anyone else. Like I can't live a life professionally that's not my own and decided by myself.
Right. You're
So
unemployable.
I'm unemployable completely.
Yes.
And this is, I haven't really had a proper employer ever. I've never clocked in necessarily. Like the little jobs I've had aside from training have been pretty loose and unregulated in a lot of ways. So yeah, I think probably within the past 3 to 6 months, I've decided like, yeah, I'm not going to exit the fitness industry, for reasons, because I don't know what else I would do, and I'd have to essentially start over from scratch in something I've had spent my whole adult life in. I have a degree in kinesiology, all these things. I have a lot of knowledge and opinions and things that I like about it. So I think that honestly, and that seems like so minimal, and like no tangible progress has been made. But the fact that I settled in on, all right, like I think fitness is where it's going to be for me. It's where I'm at. And then the fact that I kind of submitted to that idea is that's as far as I'm at. That's where I'm at right now.
Right. Cool.
That's a recent thing
So,
though.
yeah. Okay. So, what of all the people that you've worked with, what's the profile of your dream client, your favorite clients? And it's okay if it's not me. I'm gonna be offended.
No, you do fit into the archetype of the majority of type of people I train with, and that do tend to be the most enjoyable. It's business owners, people who are established in their career years or decades down the line, but even not just established, but like very, very successful, and yeah, just kind of kings of the industry, I guess, is what you could say, whatever that looks like. And so that's it. People that are for sure local to the area, and like you, how you enjoy being where you're at, don't have to travel and have an inconsistent and changing schedule. So for me, as a trainer, that's amazing when someone's here all the time. We have the same times on the same days every week, because then I can plot my life around that. But then that's also like a key thing for a successful exercise program, is that you just have that system locked in. Because it's like brushing your teeth. You know, if you decide you want to brush your teeth today, but not tomorrow, and maybe the next day, well, eventually your teeth are gonna start falling in your face. Exercise is a little different, to where you're not just like keeping health, but you can be in a place where you're above average. You're not just staying healthy, but you're like thriving, and of course, like adding years to your life. So it's more than preservative; it can be like an addition into that.
So just continuing with the metaphor, it's like your teeth are growing and growing and growing, and they get larger and larger. Is that what we're saying?
Could be. Oh,
If that's
that's
your
really
thing, I want to
insane.
have giant horse teeth.
Yeah.
Okay. Sweet. So what would you say is what is the real transformation that you deliver for people, right? Is it just, okay, they get stronger, fitter, or is it more than that?
Yeah, I think so as you can probably attest to this at this point in time, like my training bias and the style at which I train people, it's very traditional. It's strength training for one. So we're just gonna lift weights, we'll do body weight, and then we're gonna do the set and take a lot of rest, recover, and then we're gonna do it again. And so there ends up being a lot more like hanging out time spent than even actually training, but that's largely again, to my bias, that's a proper strength training program. So I think what I've seen over the years, just the decade plus I've been in it, is there, it's very trendy. There's a lot of trends in fitness, and I guess recently it's been, I don't know, like HIIT, like high intensity training, like a lot of jumping around, moving, doing this and keeping nonstop. And other things in between that, there's like boxing and there's, SoulCycle and all these things that kind of come and gone. But it's trained people to think that you have to be dead tired, like in a pile of your own like bodily fluids on the ground for it to be a successful workout, and that you have to be moving the entire time, all these things, that kind of go along with that, to where I've kind of like I've stayed in and stuck with the identity of like, no, traditional strength training is like what's good. It always has worked, and it still does. We don't have to like create this like new novel thing or like jump on a trend. I'm not going to have someone do any random movements or sets of movements, which I can't explain to you why we're doing it, or the fact that I have done it also, and I can verify to the feeling that you're going through between the sets and the reps and the effectiveness of it. So I think that's what it is like I stick with stuff that like how we train. You've probably done all, if not most, of these things before. There's nothing new, and it's going to be the same. There's probably, I don't know, 10, maybe 15 different movements we do. And you and I, we train 4 or 5 times a week. It's like, man, it can get pretty old and it can get pretty redundant, especially in a successful workout program, is you are doing those same things over and over, and you're getting better at them, and you're reaping the benefits of like not just putting more weights on the bar and more reps that you're doing, but there should be a physical representation of that as well. So I think that's what I offer, is I actually offer nothing new. But the best thing in this industry is that there's nothing new, and we shouldn't have to find the next best thing because it doesn't exist. And I see trainers who kind of have their clients do random things here and there, And it can be an attractive thing, I get it, because it would maybe even help a trainer feel more secure if they're charging a premium rate. Well, they want to offer a premium thing. Like, what's gonna make sense? They're paying all this money. Well, they should have something that's worth it. You want to stand out. But I actually stand out by doing nothing different than has been done. So that's my thoughts of like what I offer.
Do you see an impact on people's lives that go beyond the gym, beyond the body changes?
Totally. I think I can just speak to the people I interact with. Just developing like personal relationships, like you and I, we've come to know each other pretty well just over the past, I don't know, 6 or 7 months, whatever it's been. And it can be, depending on the person I'm engaging with, I'll even say this goes both ways. It's not just them benefiting or me benefiting, but it's like a therapy session, a lot of sharing of heart and things of life that goes on. And because, like I said, an hour training session, like if you add up the amount of time you're spent actually exercising, it's probably, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes that you're actually moving, and then it's spaced out the rest of the time we're just like hanging out. So we might as well make most of that time and like get to know each other. So I think, yeah, beyond that, like personal relationships, and so it can be, there's one guy, not you, one guy I train in particular, who he does state to me the benefits of like our time, and it centers him for the rest of his day. Big business guy, and he's got meetings and things done, and to when he can just have like time for himself. If there's anything on his mind, we just like talk. We have a pretty good relationship with each other. And and it's not necessarily complaining, but we just like talk about stuff, because I think a lot of times even internalizing things without it being spoken and addressed to someone or a trusted ear, can you keep it in you, and it grows, it festers, and who knows what else it becomes. So I think that's it. Just the openness and the relationships, however that is expressed within me and the other people I train.
Okay, so model wise, where this business could go, is, I mean, you can charge more, right, and still do the same thing. And the way that you justify charging more is by having a bigger transformation, right? Creating more value for people. So it's like, maybe it's like, well, we're not gonna just gonna train, but I'm gonna, control or like figure out your diet, everything that you eat. I mean, you're even gonna like coordinate some chef that comes and cooks all the meals and brings them to your house, and we're tracking you every day, and what do your numbers look like, and what does your sleep look like, and like constantly monitoring, adjusting, whatever. So like you're offering a higher level service that does more to really deliver the outcome. So right now you're in your model is you're selling your time, right? A model that makes more money is you sell the outcome. So like, what is the specific target that you have? Where do you want to be body wise, whatever, like, body metrics, where do you want to be by which time? Okay, here's the prescription, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to monitor every step of the way to deliver that result by that date, right? Like that's kind of the way that you can charge more. And then maybe it's like you don't have to show up every day, but you're still coordinating their training. So you're like, okay, today you're going to train this, tomorrow you're going to train that, you're going to eat like this, you're going to eat like that. Let's check in, monitor, and see how you're doing. Like every morning, you like get on the scale, buy the scale, every morning get on that, hook it up with me so I can see the numbers in real time, whatever. Like that kind of approach. That's one way to go. Is that something you're interested in, or you're like, no, actually, I'm good.
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't like jump off the pages to me necessarily, but I think that is a logical progression. I probably couldn't envision myself doing that necessarily. But I found a lot of people, that I think that'd be maybe half the clients I train right now would commit to that. So yeah, again, you're talking about like an added rate to that, so there'd be some potential increase in that. But yeah, I don't know. Not a huge appeal, admittedly.
No, and
Yeah.
what is it? Is it like the, tell me about what's not appealing or what is appealing about it, just for, so I'm not trying to push this on you in any way. I'm just trying to like understand your preferences.
Yeah. Yeah, I think probably like micromanaging people's lives. I actually do like the fact that my place in my clients' lives is hopefully minimally invasive, meaning that it's not a dread or a chore and it doesn't become like an obligation, but hopefully it's a luxury and a thing that's like fun. That's the service I would say I offer do is like we're gonna hopefully make it fun. Like we talked about yesterday about we're talking about supersets. I'm like, well, I told you my whole thing about it. And I'm like, well, if you wanted to do supersets, we could, because if you enjoyed that, I think that's a big benefit is little things here and there that we can tweak that are still productive towards the overall cause. If it's fun for you, then let's do it. So I think that'd be my initial thought, just off of the client base over here and the people that I know personally. I'm not sure there'd be a lot of joy over that and
For you and for
compliance
them.
for them probably, and for me mainly. That's to answer your question. I don't know if I would enjoy it, but then I think on their side the joy would be expressed through a potential lack of compliance. And yeah, I think that'd be it for me.
The other approach is another model is like more, just more online training, right? More remote online. You can have a group program where you just tell people what to do, you know, week by week, and then you track them or like they report back, whatever. And again, that can be like the training, it can be training and diet, training diet mindset, whatever. Like, is that appealing to you? Do you have enough of a like of a method there to package something? Like, 'cause that's where we kind of get into the territory where there has to be something new for people to bite on that
Sure.
kind of thing.
I think so. I do for sure like the idea of having a more expansive remote portfolio, whatever that looks like. And even if it transferred to entirely online, I think that'd be amazing. And then the reach is also beyond the limits of this neighborhood back here. I think that's probably what I would be gearing towards, because I would love the next step to be something that doesn't have a ceiling, that I wouldn't have to really, not that we're scrapping everything I'm doing now or talking about doing that, but have to kind of establish a new kind of framework of what the job is. So to me, that sounds very cool, having an online thing. But I'll tell you, when you're saying that, something that kind of popped in my mind and I've kind of thought about a little bit is kind of what we're saying, like just thinking about my journey into being a trainer and to where I can make, objectively good money doing this, and I can support myself, is I'm kind of interested in like educating other trainers. Like, how does someone even get into all this? Because like I said, I went to school for all this. They teach you all this stuff, what the book says, the data, but you're never told like how do you actually get face to face in front of a person to where you can actually use this stuff. And then once you're there, like how does it practically unfold to where you structure things and deliver it to a person? You know what I mean? So it's kind of something, because I've talked to other trainers. I was just talking to this girl I know like last week, and she lives in another state. She's just getting in training. She had a bunch of questions, and I sent her like big response. She's like, how much do I charge? All this and that. Things that no one really knows unless you're in it. And I think before I even started training, like when I was working the front desk at the gym, I got to see a lot of that and just like get in little by little and kind of understand it just by observation. So it's almost like the business, like the backside of things that no one ever thinks about until you're in it and you're like, what? Well, what do I do now? Like I'm here and I want to do it, but I don't know what to do, you know?
That's cool. I love that. So, yeah, what are some of the things that you've learned, or what are some of the things that she was asking that you could help with it with?
Yeah, just like pricing. So the girl that was talking to me the other day, she lives in, I think she's in Pennsylvania right now. And yeah, and the first thing I told her, she said that, which was important, but I was like, if it was a perfect world and you could have your own choice, like training, if you were in an affluent area, that's the best, because that's where your service is probably going to be more sought after, more valued, and then where there's a need and money to be spent, there's money to be made. So that's the first thing I would tell anybody, that like go be in a place like I mean, Malibu is great, of course. Los Angeles as a whole, Southern California, where we got sunshine all the time and there is infinite amount of pressure to be fit, you know. And if you're not fit, it's like, well, what's wrong with you? So things like that, just where fitness is like a standard of culture and there's money put towards it. That's a huge thing I tell anybody. If someone's in like, I don't know, like what Wichita, Kansas, I'm like, I don't know if that's the best place to do it. If you're there and that's where you're gonna be, like you can make it happen, but I think a clear path of like starting off is like being in the right place for that, you know what I mean? So I told her that, but I'm like, she's there, she's where she is, and like, yeah, I don't really know what they charge there, but don't undersell yourself because there's also, I think, an inherent assumption of like if someone sees a price tag attached to something, again, assuming the hourly service wage is like how I told you, I kind of picked a rate for myself that felt like is justifiable and I can provide something that's along the lines of what someone would expect. I told her not to sell herself short, even if she's just starting. Like you probably have to take all the clients you can get, but don't give a $20 discount or whatever, just because you can. Because the truth is, like as she will keep using her as an example, as she continues to grow and expand herself, like there might be a point where you kind of like, and I wish I wouldn't have given that person that discount because now I got to have this conversation with them to where, hey, like, can we get you back to the brought up to like the normal pricing? Could be a bit awkward, maybe not, but that's one thing too, is just like have a good standard of pricing that you're going to stay at. And just like, you know, if you go to the store and you buy a gallon of milk, you know, we don't haggle with the cashier like, hey, this is $6, but how about four? You know, you just buy it. That is what it is. But because we have a human in front of us, and there's a lot of things that if you can bargain for a price, you will. But I think that's a big thing that I try to do is to stay firm on my pricing. And then too, like I've never had this happen, but I could see a situation where maybe say if I had clients who know each other and they somehow start talking about how much they each pay and one's paying far less than the other, like that could be kind of weird too. And that's a problem I always would want to and have avoided. For all the reasons of who knows what that ends up being, just weird, awkward, or whatever.
And how
So
do you get
those are
your
a
first
few
clients?
things. Good question. So I think what I did just so happened to be amazing just by being at the front desk because that job is checking people in, it's saying hi, you end up knowing everyone by name. And with that, there's passing interactions that just happen. So you develop personal relationships. So the answer is personal relationship, but how do you do that? Just by being in, again, in the right place, not just in this city, but in this setting. Like if you want to work in fitness, you're going to be in it. You can't just show up randomly one day and say, hi, I'm a guy you've never seen. Come work out with me. People are like, well, why? Why would I? So that's the one thing. And I think too, and not that I did the perfect path ever, but I think the things I did without even thinking about it worked for me. Like when I was coaching and working at the high school, because I wanted to work with youth athletes. I thought that was going to be my lane long term, is that I worked with youth athletes and youth athletes only. So I ended up training a lot of those kids on the side, like the football players or the whatever kids that I would train at their school after school with their sports teams. I would train them on the side, and so like I kind of got in with the kids that way, getting some clients, and then but then like their parents, I got to know them because I knew the kids, and I started training like their moms and their mom's friends. And that was actually a huge expansive thing, was just like getting in where people knew me and they got used to seeing me and just trusted me, of course, too. Trust is a part of the personal relationship. And then I would say too, kind of what you said, like you got to look the part. Like being fit is one thing, but then, you know, it's a huge part of its vanity. People, you know, I don't know of a ton of people in Malibu where we are that actually are in it for health, which is interesting because everyone's kind of is healthy and everyone wants to lose 5 or 10 pounds or whatever, but no one's like pre-diabetic or whatever. I've actually never had someone in that position before, so it's just like want to look better and want to optimize. So I think for myself, I'm like, well, you know, just like you said, like I'm gonna stay fit because it benefits me as a billboard. I want to do it and I like to do it. But then too, like I'm gonna dress a certain way. I'm gonna at least have like one or two cohesive colors that flow, just be a very simple palette, but it looks clean and I look presentable, not just show up with like whatever, like wrinkled shirt or assortment of stuff, dirty shoes. You know, my white shoes, I keep them clean. Like just like look clean and like put together. People see that, and I've gotten a
I
lot
told my
of
wife that
compliments.
you were going to fire me as a client if I didn't get my shoes washed, my wet
Yeah,
shoes washed. She's like, "Really?" I'm like, "Yeah, for real. Totally, totally for real."
so you washed them.
Not yet. No.
Oh,
I hope you'll work with me for a few more days till we get it done. No, I
yeah,
get
so
it.
the
Yeah, I remember like when I first got there, I asked Liam at the front desk if he knew a trainer. He's like, "Yeah, me." So
Yeah,
yeah.
that's an advantage too. He can do that, and like I think I did the same thing when I was working the desk. Like you're the first one, the first face people see. But I don't know if all trainers, if I wanted a trainer that also works the front desk, you know, like I said, how I was doing that for a while too is also productive to where I cut that tie, so I show people that I'm not having to do other things because I don't have enough clients or I can't do it full time, you know.
Yeah, totally. You will still flip the switch for the fan from time to time, but it's not bad.
I'll do things like that.
Okay, cool. So it sounds like there's some energy there, on just like the building of the business. So it's like your whole angle is like tried and true, simple, effective. Like that's the vibe I'm getting from you. Like with the training, with how to build a business, like get out there, go where the clients are, where people spend money on this kind of stuff, build your way up, build the relationships. Like you're not like a post selfies on Instagram and build a big, huge Instagram following type of person. That was never what you did. Is that right?
Never. I don't even have Instagram at this point in time. And when I did have it, I was just stalking and creeping around on people. I was never posting, and I've never used it for my self or business promotion because I'm just not good at social media. I know I could learn, but I don't have that like inherently as a skill set or as something like in me. But two, it's interesting you say that because there's a guy I started training. Maybe around the same time we started training, actually, and his assistant reached out to me, and they kind of did this like loose but long form like investigation of me, which was kind of funny. I've never had as intensive as they were, like asking questions, like some they wanted me to send a personal bio, and then they asked, and I still hadn't like talked to the guy at this point in time, but the assistant is like, yeah, send a bio, send us a link to your LinkedIn and to your Instagram. I'm like, well, I don't have LinkedIn, I have Instagram, but I haven't posted on it in like 2 years. So I sent a bio, which I think is the selling point because a lot of we've already been talking about. And then I'm like, yeah, I don't have LinkedIn. I sent it to Instagram with you know, there's nothing on there. But the guy who I eventually got talking to, I've been training since then. He's like, yeah, we're talking one day. Maybe like just a few weeks ago. But he's like, yeah, actually, I was looking at you and another guy, and I like that you were more low key. That there was like not this whole like big thing about me because the other guy is more promoting of himself for sure, but then he'll post like clients working out on his page, which you know that works, and for some people that's great, but it actually was a net positive for me, and I think that is actually a lot of the vibe in Malibu too. That's probably a good question also, just depending on where you are, is like what is the community value? Because people move to Malibu, it's great, but they also are here because it's quiet and they'd rather not be seen. A lot of people are like that because they spent, especially if someone's like in a entertainment industry, like you go here so you can blend in and just be like who you were 30 years ago when no one knew your face or heard your name. So I think that I offer that, like the anonymity, an anonymous factor of myself. And then I don't care who anyone is or isn't at the same time. So yeah, I think it can very well be done without anyone having to do a ton of social media stuff.
The question then, though, is if you want to go that direction with your business of teaching other people how to start, like how do you find those clients, right?
Yeah. So then I would have to do exactly what I said I don't do. Right? Have to reach and find them. Totally. Yeah. So I guess that would be the big roadblock in that way, or the next hurdle is to establish a you know, an online identity and format with that. So
And like the but then the content is gonna be different from like it's not you selling yourself as a trainer, it's you showing your lifestyle as a trainer, right? Here's all the things I didn't do to become a successful personal trainer. Here's what I don't do. Here's like I don't follow fads. I don't do anything fucking fancy. Every day for my lunch break, I go to the beach and hang out and tan and have my lunch and jump in the ocean. Like it's that kind of thing that you want to post, right?
Yeah, totally. That's all true.
Yeah, right.
As you
Yeah.
know.
So it's, and I think that's like you become the anti, like the Zach where everybody zigs, you know, of like the
Totally.
model. Whereas like, yeah, you don't need to post crazy like gym workout selfies, blah blah blah, to get a full roster of clients, right? You don't even need to be on fucking Instagram at all to get a full roster of clients. Here's how I did it. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it too, is just 'cause all those things and stuff we're talking about, that's just like me being me. I think everyone has a version of themselves which they probably haven't even found and they might be afraid to be, but it's all the while inhibiting their ability to be authentically productive in their professional workspace. 'Cause I think that was a huge thing for me, is like the people I work with and who I am, like, this is it. There's no face, there's no front. But it's so easy also that way too, because I don't have to, razzle dazzle myself up. I'm definitely not a type A type of guy. Like, I could live a life where I spoke 10 words an entire day and be totally fine. But there's probably an assumption of like, you have to be this, this like encourager allowed, all this kind of stuff. And again, I'm not that. But you're gonna attract the type of people who don't want that, don't care for that. Like, there is an audience and a client base for everybody if they just decide to be themselves and find their bias and their philosophy of how they go about training or whatever it is.
So speaking about that, like where did Nathan learn that he had to be a nice boy?
It's my parents, man. I was raised well. I was raised really well. And that's a fortunate thing. Like, I've really had no significant life adversity, and just establishing a good reputation over the years. Even before I was working as a trainer, like, I've been in Malibu for since I was 14, so most of my life at this point in time. But I guess fundamentally, what carries being nice, or the things beyond just being likable, is like my faith, like being a having like my Christian faith be the fundamental basis of my life and something I live my convictions by, especially when you don't want to, because anyone can be nice to the people that you like or they're nice to you, but what about everyone else who maybe you don't know yet or you don't care for? Can you at least be like objectively optimistic of them? Or even of your very circumstances. Like, can I be optimistic about this conversation we're having that's going to lead to something? Can I believe that I have the ability to actually execute something beyond what I've been doing the past 10 years?
You got in trouble at some point, right? I
I
forget the
did.
details. Is that something you're
Yeah.
open to sharing here?
Yeah, we can talk about that. I don't mind. Yeah, so in 2013, I was 19 years old, and I got arrested for drunk driving. And so that's short. I mean, it's not a long story, but basically, I was racing a friend on Pacific Coast Highway, close to the gym. I've told you this, but just as a
This kind of thing
recap.
makes you very popular next door, I'm sure.
Yeah, luckily there was no next door before, at that point in time. But for sure, man, I'm glad I got out at earlier than I needed to. But yeah, so I was racing a friend. I was going super fast, and it was like midnight, and I had like one beer in my system, as an underage drinker, so it doesn't really matter how much I had. I ended up losing control of my car, crashing, and I hit a telephone pole. And so someone called the cops. Cops show up, and they're like, "Oh my God!" They're like, "What happened?" I'm like, "I don't know. I just lost control." And they discover that I had a trace amount of alcohol in my system, but nonetheless, it was more than enough. So yeah, when I was 19, I got a DUI, but I can also it's been expunged, so my record says the case is dismissed. So officially, I don't know what you're talking about. But yeah, that happened.
So what I'm getting at is there's a I think we did we speak about Iron John?
I don't think so. Doesn't ring any bells.
No. All
Maybe we
right,
did.
one of my favorite books, Iron John, is this it's a book by Robert Bly, and Robert Bly is an American poet. But Iron John is really a fairy tale. I forget if it's from the Grimm brothers or wherever the original fairy tale comes from. But the story goes like this. There's a kingdom somewhere in the middle of nowhere. Who knows where? As always in fairy tales, we don't know where it is. There's a kingdom. And then there's this young prince or young man who comes in, knocks on the door, and is like looking for adventure. He's like, "Do you guys have something dangerous and adventurous for me?" And people bring him to the king, and the king is like, "Yes, actually, we do. There's this place outside of this little kingdom where whenever I send my soldiers out there, they never come back." And the young man is like, "That sounds awesome. Let me go." So he takes his little dog and he walks out there to that area, tries to find the area, and then like as he's walking there, this like hand, this thing comes up out of a lake and grabs the dog and pulls it into the lake, and the young man is like, "I think I found it." And so then he gathers a group of soldiers to go out to this lake together. And I may mess up some details, but basically they go out to this lake together with buckets, and then they start emptying the lakes one bucket at a time. And what is revealed at the bottom at this of this lake is this hairy, hairy man, hairy monster, and his name is Iron John. Yeah. So, and they put him in chains and bring him back into the kingdom to into behind the walls. And the king puts this hat, they put him in a jail cell. They put him in prison. So he's down there in this prison cell, stays there for forever, for a long time. Big hairy monster, Iron John. And then one day the king's little son comes down in front of that jail cell and he plays with this little ball. His little ball he's playing. And then the ball rolls in to the cage where Iron John is. And the ball says, "Hey, Iron John, can I have my ball back?" And Iron John says, "Yes, but not until you open the gate. Not until you let me out of this prison." And the boy is like, "Oh," shudders, runs away. At some point later, he's now a teenager and he misses his ball. And so he comes back down in the basement to Iron John and says, "Hey, Iron John, can I have my ball back now?" And Iron John says, "Yes, but not until you let me out of this cage." And he's like, "Oh shit." And he runs away again. And so sometime later, he's like 32, he's got a good business going, he's got his life set. And then he goes down there one more time and says, "Iron John, can I have my ball back? I really want that ball. I miss my ball." And Iron John's like, "Sure, as soon as you let me out of this cage." "Well, where do I find the key? How would I get you out of this cage?" And Iron John says, "The key is under your mother's pillow." And so that's where the story ends. That's where the story ends. But it's a metaphor for being a man. It's a metaphor for being a man. So inside every man is a hairy monster that can't be controlled. And it's where aggression lies. It's where our sexuality lies. It's where anger lies. It's where that uncontrollable side of us lies. And the ball is our creativity, our joy, our playfulness, etc. And the metaphor here is that that side of us, the Iron John side of us, is scary. It's not polite. It's not nice. It's not really. People get uncomfortable around it. We get uncomfortable with that side of ourselves. Other people get uncomfortable with that side. And so we become nice guys by packing that away, by putting it behind lock. But the ball representing our youthful joy, creativity, playfulness, all that stuff gets locked away along with the ball, along with Iron John, along with the monster. And at some point in our lives, that starts to call to us to be like, hey, like this is where guys hit this midlife crisis. They're like, fuck, like I've done everything right, but like it's like what something's missing. What the fuck is it? Well, what's missing is a part of you that you disowned as a little boy, because you're like, this is too much. Like I destroy things. I like say things that hurt people. I do things that are scary. And so this is also what happens in relationship, right? If you've heard like alpha males and beta males, and like, you know, all the girls want to fuck all the alphas out there. And then when they're done fucking all the alphas, they'll settle with a beta male. And then, but then they're not really maybe emotionally satisfied or sexually f satisfied in that relationship. And then they go cheat, or they divorce, or they whatever later, or they get a guy who still has some alpha in him, but then they domesticate the fuck out of that guy. They're like, no, you gotta put the toilet seat down, and you gotta help with the chores, and you gotta do all the blah, blah, blah. And the more that we comply with that, the more they lose their interest in us, the more the polarity is gone. And so the reason why the key is under your mom's pillow, oh, and here's the kicker: you can't ask your mom for the pillow. Sure, sorry, for the key. You can't ask your mom for the key. You have to steal it from under your mom's pillow. Is because like this is part of the dynamic between boys and their mothers. Like, is that we that side of us is usually ends up being we learn to kind of pack that away a little bit with our moms, and moms aren't guys, so they can't initiate us into manhood. You know, only a man can. But we pack that away, but we can't. So we to in order for her to take care of us and all that stuff, but we can't ask her for the key. We have to take it. We have to take that part of ourselves back without needing her permission, right? And that goes for other women in our lives. We can't wait for their permission to do this, because it's about us fully owning who we are. And so the reason I bring all of this up is that you're a very nice guy, right? But there's an Iron John in there that you haven't really made friends with yet. And I think you're going to find that as you explore that more, your everything in your life opens up. Like your business, the work that you do with clients, how you show up with clients, how you are able to communicate about what you do to attract clients, the impact that you have on them, whether we talk about the other trainers in their work, or we talk about the clients that you have that you work with out with yourself. And as well, I know, like you talked about how, starting a family and all that stuff, right? It's like it's going to help there as well. And so it's yeah. What comes up when I share all this?
I mean, it's pretty relatable, like how we talked about the other day. I described it one way, and you said, oh, extended adolescence is what you said. And so to me, that's what that called back to, and for sure, I completely agree with that. I think past few years I've made a lot of massive leaps toward maturity, just like on an emotional level. But then it's like there needs to be an outward expression of that, because I still feel like I'm living that adolescent life, which I kind of ha have stumbled to and have you kind of gained just by chance, instead of putting myself towards something where I intentionally build and overcome known resistance, rather than just having this nice but easy path. So that's what kind of makes me think of, is that there's an external expression needing to be made. Sorry, someone's calling me. Again, assuming that there's the capacity for that to actually equate to something. And I said this to someone recently. My birthday was October, and I was with some friends at a dinner, and they're like, "What do you want for the next year?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't know." Like, I thought beyond that. I'm like, I would like this year and the years beyond to look more like adulthood than the past, whatever, 16 years have been. We'll just say that. Because I feel like there's been, steps and increments, but I would like for a leaping, bounding effect of an adult, like you said, an Iron John. I almost said Iron John. That's his name.
Iron John, yeah.
An Iron John kind of thing, like to build something and have something beyond what just came to me because I was in the right place, just doing what I was doing.
I'm wondering, so one of my lenses is the mind bug lens, which is like what happens is that we come into this world and we orchestrate our upbringing to install certain mind bugs. And when I look at you, like the nice guy part of you is like around not doing something wrong. Like is that how, does that resonate with you? Like having like go ahead.
I was gonna say, what do you mean by that? By
Well, I mean, so like as a boy, right? Like how did you become so nice is what I'm trying to figure out. Like what happened for you that made you so nice?
I don't know. It's a great question. Like,
And
go ahead.
yeah, go ahead.
I was saying, I don't know. Like, there's never been anything that has caused me to like dig in and grit my teeth and to like impose wrath upon something or someone. Because I said this already once, but like, I've had an easy life, like great family, and these things are all good. Like it said, it's not a problem, but it hasn't created something else to come out to be used productively. So like I didn't have any like school bullies. I played sports and was decent enough to like I played all the time, and I people were always like really nice to me, and like I don't, it was super easy. Just and growing up in Malibu, it's like there's no real struggle, even if you're just like a kid on the coasting side of things. It's just very easy. So I think the fact that there's been nothing to provoke me along the way, that's probably why.
Could be, All right, well, we're out of time here, so or we're soon to be out of time, so we're not going to be able to explore that too much, but yeah, I would like go study, read Iron John, go study some Robert Ly. He's taught me so much, and it's really fascinating because we're so screwed up around this in our society. Like he tells us in the book, he tells about a society where past a certain age, boys are not allowed to communicate with their mothers, period. Like not even have eye contact. Every communication has to go through the sister or the father or someone else. And it's and according to him, that culture has the best marriages, the best relationships, the best relationship between the sexes, and the greatest level of respect between men and women. They had just like amazing. They're amazing together. And it's like we get screwed up by our mothers, not unintentionally, but they screw us up. And like just little things like the fact that they will, like, your mom is gonna fondle your private parts as a little baby, because of course she is, because she's gonna wash you and all that stuff, right? But there's something about that that becomes like just becomes a little weird in some ways, and like just messes with our relationship with ourselves, our masculinity, and with women. And traditionally, at some point, at some age, like 11, 12, whatever, like the fathers, the men would take us away from the village and take us away on a quest for a week. Or like, oh, not us, but like the boys, right? We'd be taken away and be initiated. That initiation process into manhood is missing in society today. And it's like men are scared of what makes us of the masculine. We're scared of the fucking the anger, the drive, the gotta fight. Like we're so scared of that, and especially in a Christian culture, it's like very that's like, no, we're very nice, we're very kind, we're very sweet, very understanding. Whereas women are scared of surrender. They want to be like men, right? They want to be like, I'm a power woman, I can do it, I can build a business, I can have a career, I can do everything, I want to build a strong body and like have six pack and abs and the burr, all this stuff, what they're scared of, and society will reward them for that, right? They'll reward them, be like, oh my God, yeah, you go, girl, that's amazing. Yes, you all this stuff. They'll be maybe childless and partnerless and whatnot, but society cheers them on. But they're scared of surrender, of just like opening, like heart open adventure, surrender, everything like flowing, everything feminine. Us guys were like rewarded for being emotional and sweet and nice and domesticated and like, oh my God, yeah, oh my man, he's so emotionally available, blah blah blah. But what's needed is that it's great that we can do that, and we need to be anchored in our fucking balls, you know? And this is where society's totally screwed up, and Robert Bly is someone who's like really dug deep into that. There's another book called No More Mr. Nice Guy, which is also worth a read, which is fantastic. So,
Yeah, I'll check that out.
yeah. Because that, my friend, I think for sure the teaching other people how to do what you're doing, that like opposite the trend kind of way, is powerful. And I think when you start to really embrace what I'm talking about here with the Iron John thing, that's the unlock for everything. Business, relationships, family, all of it.
Cool. That's great. I'll investigate that. Appreciate you sharing that with me.
Cool, man. All right. What do you take with you today?
I'm gonna do that reading, and even just the stuff that I said, which was already in there, putting that out there is very eye-opening. You
Yeah.
know, I think that's good direction in what we talked about, like training the trainers or whatever you want to call it. And I obviously had a lot to say about it, so it seems like that's the direction to go towards.
All right. Cool, man.
Yeah.